This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. That is the song I Love to Rock by April Wine. I can remember hearing that tune played back in the day on FM radio, along with other heavy metal bands. There's another Canadian group called Rush that also was on the radio. April Wine was a frequent visitor in San Antonio during the heavy metal heydays, during the 70s, 80s, a little bit into the 90s. The UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures is hosting a one-day special event called Heavy Metal Capital of the World, where they explore San Antonio's heavy metal roots. How did it become the heavy metal capital of the world? That's going to be on Sunday, October 21st, and we're going to be talking about this phenomenon today on The Source. Why did metal find a happy home in San Antonio? What does that say about this city? How did San Antonio fans help shape the world of heavy metal? And what are your favorite heavy metal memories? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. And we're going to be hearing some heavy metal faves throughout the hour. Let's talk about our guest. We're joined by Ruby Garza. She's the creative director of the South Texas Popular Culture Center, the TexPop. Donnie Meals is with us, local legend, music business program coordinator at the San Antonio College. And Gregory Peek is with us. He's a historian at Penn State University. And again, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. Ruby, you are the driver of this in many ways. Can you talk about your love of heavy metal?
Well, I naturally grew up in a heavy metal, hard rock loving family with my father, all of our uncles, my aunts. It's just naturally in the family. My brother had a heavy metal band. It's just in the blood. We grew up in a rebellious, naturally rebellious, you know, my parents were, and it just passed on to me.
So it was in your DNA, in your blood.
It is.
How did it get there? I mean, do you want? So you started on your own exploration about San Antonio's heavy metal roots.
Correct. Well, taking over as creative director at the South Texas Museum of Popular Culture after Margaret Moser had passed away, I was trying to plan our first big exhibit for the year, and we really wanted to explore heavy metal music and San Antonio being the heavy metal capital of the world. And really it came about when I found out that there was a San Antonio Slayer, and growing up in a heavy metal family, how did I not know about this? So finding out there was a San Antonio Slayer and hearing about the ever famous SA Slayer versus LA Slayer battle for the name that took place at Villa Fontana in 84, it blew my mind. And obviously I had to dig in, and it started a whole, you know, rabbit hole of just research and information and finding out why we became the heavy metal capital of the world, and, you know, seeing on the radio side and, you know, the people bringing in the music and concerts and shows, plus the local underground that was going on. We were rocking. You couldn't touch us.
But that rock off is legendary. This is SA Slayer, Prepare to Die. Donnie Meals, you're a DJ during the heyday of heavy metal in San Antonio, played mornings, weekends, you were all over the radio, a voice. You had a point of view, you saw a lot of this involved. What did you see? How did San Antonio, in your view, become heavy metal capital of the world?
I think it was a matter of the radio station exposing that music when other people wouldn't touch it. You know, prior to us playing metal, even Joe Anthony was kind of a little bit of a rebel, where he was doing the Harlequin Serenade, I think was the name of his show on KMAC way back when. But then when Lou came to town and they started exposing.
But they grew it from nothing, because KMAC was such a crazy different kind of format. It was religious.
Oh, they had the KMAC orchestra in the old days. It was, but, you know, KMAC.
They shoehorned it in there.
Yes.
And grew it.
The part that made that work was when they simulcasted from noon to 6. Lou and Joe would be on noon to 6. And one of the reasons that was so important was because the FM signal was really weak back then. I can't remember exactly how much, but we were 12,000, 13,000 watts. That was it when, you know, the Sirius FM stations were 100,000, which what that equates to is coverage. You know, you were lucky to pick up KISS, I don't know, outside of Loop 410 sometimes. But KMAC, being an AM station, was able to reach all the way up to San Marcos. You know, so it wasn't really a matter of the quality of the signal that people associate with FM. AM station was just the quality of the music and the caliber of the music that they were playing.
But people responded to it. When it was played, there were, I mean, they played all
rebellious.
Sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, but, yeah. I mean, we didn't just do metal, I think would be good to say. But, man, when it came to the metal, we were really cutting new ground and not afraid to play it to the point that the other stations definitely saw what we were doing and they were afraid to play it. So we were the one-point source for that kind of stuff.
We got on Twitter, Jeff says, that was a terrific time in San Antonio. A lot of shows were held at the old Randy's Rodeo on Bandera Road.
And that was Jack Orban's.
Randy's, well, there was also some that Lou and Joe promoted on their own, but Jack did, you know, tons over there as well. I think there's still scorch marks on the ceiling there from when KISS played there. And we got to see, you know, like I said, we didn't just do metal. We also, they brought in the Sex Pistols.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
a legendary
some very
show.
Some very unique bands like Ozkenaz or Pavlov's Dog.
Let's go, let me ask you that then. I'm just going to go to caller. We got a lot of calls here already. Tom Shepke is on the line. Tom Shepke.
Hey, Tom.
Tom, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Well, I was going to make note of this, that in the mid-1970s in San Antonio, there were three album rock stations, and to be different from the other two, I think that's why Lou and Joe decided to go in a totally different direction. So, and I would call it more hard rock than heavy metal. John Lyle made a great observation once. He said that the music that KISS played back in the mid-70s was the music that other AOR stations around the country, album rock stations, The albums that we played on KISS were the albums that other stations would either give away to their listeners or they'd be in their production room to be used for, you know, just music. So they kind of forged their own ground. And if you think about it, a lot of the bands that Joe and Lou started to play in the mid-70s, they didn't take off in other markets. There were a few exceptions.
Right.
Rush was one.
Okay, so Tom, we're going to break. We're going to listen to a little bit of Juggernaut here, All Hallows Eve. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. I wouldn't, you know, you'd probably get confused and think you're listening to a radio station from the backwards, from the 1970s or 80s, listening to heavy metal music being played back in the day, back before corporate radio. This is what San Antonio's radio sounded like. We're talking about heavy metal bands and how they came to San Antonio and found fans that with an unquenchable thirst for what they would produce from their amps. What do you remember about rock and roll, heavy metal in San Antonio back in the day? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. Metal Mike is on the line. And Metal Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I got some great memories. I'm born and raised here in San Antonio. I grew up with this metal scene, and actually I was in a couple of bands, my brother and I, and we have great memories of playing at the Via Fontana. It used to be a little theater right there on the hemisphere. It's long gone now, but just wanted to say that that was a great time, and I have to give credit to, of course, Joe Anthony. He brought all these bands and put them on the map, like Budgie and Riot and who else? All, just a bunch of bands. I can't even remember all their names, but he, I have to credit him. And it was just a great time. I just wanted to say it. The great memories of this, of that theater, and just playing in a couple of bands and just part of the metal scene. It was great.
All right, Metal Mike, thanks for calling in and telling us about your favorite memories. With us in the studio to talk about this era, Ruby Garza. She's the creative director for the South Texas Popular Culture Center. Now, this is not your generation. You've come to this and you have kind of seen it as like you're learning about history.
Yes, this is true. Again, finding out, you know, about San Antonio Slayer, and how did I not know about that? That just couldn't be. So I dug in and, you know, started finding all the early heavy metal bands, the local underground scene, and, you know, talking to all of these heavy metal players. All of them will hands down pay tribute to Joe Anthony and Lou Roney, K-Mat Kiss, and, you know, these people talk about their stories of trying to get to the radio and put it on just to listen to them. You have some wonderful stories. And again, everybody will credit Joe Anthony, Lou Roney for the influence. I mean, people were hearing Budgie, Rush, Judas Priest for the first time ever and absolutely getting their mind blown. And a lot of these teenagers ran out and formed bands right after hearing these.
Donnie Mills, you were a DJ at K-Mat Kiss, and you worked with these guys. Do you think, what would they think that they have become legend? They're legendary.
Why did they become legendary?
I mean, no. What do you think they thought they were crafting something that was going to stick around?
I don't think so. No, we were just having a good time and playing music. From my perspective, now Lou might have a different attitude. I don't know, but it was there was this interesting cooperation and some unwritten rules that we all tried to adhere by, and it was rather, you know, inviting. It was. There was no strict format. We tried to read the audience and then play music accordingly.
Right, but you have to wonder, okay, here's a song I think kind of speaks to it. Did it speak? Did this music speak to the working man ethos of San Antonio? Of course, is Rush, the Working Man, and this is an anthem of San Antonio. You know, I'm not fancy. We're just getting it done. A lot of folks just living paycheck to paycheck.
And, you know, and that particular song itself is like from their very first album. Nobody knew who they were. We suddenly discovered, I say we very liberally, but we discovered this Canadian superhighway of music that came into San Antonio. So we were able to play some of these first albums. And of course, you know, most people know that Rush went on to huge fame and fortune, but we were able to identify that before any of that happened. Same thing happened with Judas Priest. I mean, that very first Judas Priest album, the Sad Wings of Destiny, that is a screaming juggernaut. Sure, they ended up having popular success a few albums later, but we were playing that one. It was like, It catch your attention, that's for sure.
Let's go to Walt. Walt's on the line. Hey, Walt, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'd just like to say that my very first concert was in the Hemisphere Arena, and I'll never forget it was Def Leppard Pyromania Tour with Crocus, the Headhunter, with the Headhunter album supporting, opening up. I'll never forget that as my first show. And like a few other people were mentioning, Joe Anthony, if it wasn't for him, we probably wouldn't have any rock and roll metal here in this town. And God bless that man for bringing it to us. And one of the other bands I wanted to remind Metal Mike was another band that he brought down here that gave him their shout was Triumph, even though he said there were numerous bands that he couldn't remember. That's another band we can't forget. Gil Moore, you know, and the other two guys that were with him, with Rick Emmett, You know, I mean, it's just, and Mr. Levine, I mean, they got the shot here first, you know?
Absolutely. So, I'm going to go to another caller really quick. I've got Michael Morales on the line. Michael Morales, oh, man, go ahead.
How's it going, guys?
All right, dude. Tell us about, from your view.
Well, it's such a wonderful perspective listening to everybody speak today. My story, I came along a little bit later. I was a kid listening to Kiss and Joe Anthony, and what Lou and Joe were doing was really exciting because, like many of your callers today, we were all playing in garage bands during the time that bands like Rush and Def Leppard were, you know, kind of building their reputations nationally. My perspective and my understanding, after becoming friends with some of these guys, I had a recording career that put me on a Polygram label called Mercury, so I ended up being label mates and buds with the guys in Kiss and, you know, the guys in Def Leppard. As a matter of fact, Def Leppard and my clients, I've hosted them here at Studio M in the last decade, recording them here, and they've been very honest and forthright about the role that San Antonio played in the development of careers like Rush and Def Leppard and AC/DC and all these bands that were not stalwarts at the time that Joe Anthony and Lou Roney kind of doubled down and decided to play these guys. And I kind of look at it like this kind of holy or unholy, if you will, cabal. Joe Anthony was tapped into what was going on the East and West Coast. And most kids and most cities in the center of the nation didn't get those latest bands and trends until much later. But Joe was tapped in, and I think that he used his influence to convince a lot of those developing acts to come to San Antonio and play. And him and Jack or him and Lou would work together as promoters and radio broadcaster. And look, that's the 1-2 punch in the music business.
Right. Michael Morales, thank you so much of Rockstar Academy, also a great recording artist. Let's go to a break, and we're going to hear some Judas Priest. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about heavy metal music in San Antonio. Ozzy Osbourne has left his mark on San Antonio in many different ways, and he certainly did it musically. We won't talk about the other stuff just now. But, you know, what was it about? I mean, people in San Antonio just love Ozzy Osbourne. Why? What is it about all that? Give us a call. Tell us your heavy metal memories. We're talking about that this afternoon. We've got Ruby Garza with us. She's the creative director of the South Texas Popular Culture Center, the Tex Pop. Donnie Meals, the music program coordinator at San Antonio College. Also, he was a legend in San Antonio. Radio waves, spin into tunes, the platters that matter over at KMAC and KISS. And Gregory Peek is now with us. He's a historian at Penn State University. And Gregory, why is heavy metal music worthy of examination?
That's a great question. It's worthy for examination because it is all about identity, as you mentioned in your earlier bit. People are drawn to the music because of youthfulness, rebelliousness, maybe a sense of alienation. Maybe they like the musical virtuosity of heavy metal. So there are a number of different things going on, but, you know, with San Antonio, I think some of it's generational. I think there are definitely strong ethnic and class components, and this is what I hope to uncover with my examination of this musical scene.
So, but Gregory, you're also from San Antonio, right?
That's correct, yes.
So what kind of shows did you see here?
I was born in 1980, and the sort of golden age or the golden era of all this had already passed me by when I came of age. But, you know, I have seen AC/DC in San Antonio. I saw Pink Floyd when they came to the Dome in 94. I've seen Scorpions and Judas Priest in San Antonio. So, you know, some of the legacy acts that San Antonio helped make famous, I just didn't see them in their day.
All right. So let's go to a couple of callers. Art is on the line.
Yeah.
And Art Villarreal. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, man. Go right ahead.
Good. Yeah. Hi, Ruby. Is Johnny there still?
I'm hanging in there.
Hey, hey, guys. How you doing? So, yeah, my recollection of, you know, the budding music scene back here. I was a little kid, like Michael Morales mentioned a little while ago. So, you know, probably a preteen and listening to all the proto metal and stuff that Joe Anthony and Lou Reini were spinning. So that obviously had a huge impact on me. And I'm always telling people about the days when I'd spin through the radio dial on the FM and I'd hear, you know, some top 40 music. And there was that one little station with the kind of lower signal. It was playing something completely different that always caught my attention. So that's when I got familiar with Budgie and Moxie and Priest and Rush and all the other bands that San Antonio embraced later. So definitely that playlist was a huge influence.
All right, so you're a guitar player.
Yes.
So okay. Yeah. Back in the day, getting information about how to play like that was not that easy. We didn't have the access of
right.
How did you learn how to play, you know, the box and all these things? Okay, I guess we lost Art Villarreal.
Sorry, Art.
And he was one of the original guitarists for
yeah, for S.A. Slayer. But it was so interesting, you know, I mean, you really had to sit mm-hmm. down and power through to figure out how to play like that. It wasn't like
right.
there's the information.
You'd burn up records. You know, you just keep playing it over and over while you try to figure out where they were going. They didn't have tabs or
YouTube or nothing to
yeah.
figure out how to play yeah. like you can today.
And then you compound that with your monthly budget for spandex.
And glitter and other things. All right. But, you know, it's not just the music. Okay, we talk about heavy metal. And, of course, the music is a big part of it. But there's also a lot of iconography and imagery and certain things that come along with that. So let's explore that with Metallica. That's Enter Sandman from Metallica. There was dark images, a lot of things playing with death, you know, a lot of things talking about the other side. You know, I wonder if there is some sort of connectivity between San Antonio's Catholicism and the embracing of a lot of the imagery that we saw in heavy metal. I mean,
as in the pendulum swinging the other way?
Yeah, or even like if you believe in one side, if you believe in one side of the coin, you also believe in the other side of the coin.
Sure.
And you have to figure out how to strike a balance. Let me go to Gregory Peake about that. Is there anything to that?
I definitely think so. I think, you know, if you look at the indigenous religious practices of Latin America stretching up through Mexico and southwestern United States, there's a strong connection with life and death and the passing of cycles and whatnot. And, you know, the Catholic Church, when it came to the New World, it incorporated that into its belief structure as a way to convert the indigenous. So I think there's a cultural tradition that just has carried over into the music, and I think it's evident in heavy metal, definitely. I mean, it's also shocking, you know. If you want to get attention, you want to be provocative, then sort of playing to that other side of the coin, as you say, is a way to get that attention.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Dave is on the line. Dave, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much.
Let me get you off speaker.
Well, I'm from Corpus, and I moved here in 93 originally.
And back then, I remember the rodeo, and then, of course, we had a great venue was Sneakers, which was out on Perrin Vidal off of the 410. The idea is that great venues, great to hear about these old venues that I spent time in. But really, that tradition continues. I mean, we have a Bonds Rock Bar downtown. We have Zombies kind of on the north side. Booze Hounds, again, right off Perrin Vidal. Quartermain's a big venue on the north side as well. They're all continuing the tradition. They're providing, you know, big venues for some of the better metal bands. We've got some really great metal bands in town. Jess Kill, we've got Blah, we've got Judas Priest Text. These are all really good cover bands. They specialize. And we support those bands still today. Even
all right.
though I've reached my 60s, I'm still saying yes, you know, to these kind of venues and this kind of entertainment.
All right, Dave, thanks for calling in. So he talks about how this vibe is still rocking San Antonio. Ruby Garza from the South Texas Popular Culture Center. So it's not just a nostalgic view. This is still alive today.
Absolutely. I myself just purely love to rock out. I love to get blasted out of my skull. So I love heavy music. I love anything hard. I love all genres of music. It's just something that's in the blood. And I don't think it really has anything to do with, you know, my views of Catholicism or anything religious. I think as teenagers, we're just naturally going through hormones and have natural human emotions and frustration and anger. And it just feels good to have a release and to genuinely just rock out. Headbang, just get it out.
Donnie Meals?
You know, I think that, was it Dave that your last caller there?
Yeah.
He has a very valid salient point about these clubs that are still continuing the San Antonio tradition, because the some serious problems with the live music scene started 10-15 years ago with the with your Ticketmasters, which then become Live Nation, which then, you know, this, there's so much control of what will come into town that is dictated by one or two companies. But so these small clubs are the things that are keeping it alive.
Yeah, but and when these mega bands were coming to San Antonio back in the day before they were mega bands, the tickets were cheap.
Yeah, real cheap.
Jack Urban fought to keep it that way too.
Yeah, I think that their original ad campaign will never charge more than $4.95. But you know, they hung in there as long as they could do that. But then of course venue prices go up, and then you get other, you know, the business changes, so you have to still make a profit of some sort, or at least try.
Right. And so now with the, you know, we have corporate media running the show, you know, and you have playlists that are derived through an algorithm and not mm-hmm. through the personal taste and curation of a visionary like we had with Joe Anthony. I wonder if you could talk about that, Donnie Meals, since you're a veteran of radio.
I think it's, that's what made it work, is that we had a radio station that was locally owned, not corporately owned, therefore a owner that was happy with whatever Lou and Joe brought in, as long as the, you know, the bottom line is visualized. Then you have programming and you got sales. They all promoted each other. I just don't think that is possible without it being locally owned. The corporations, once a station got bought by a corporation, then you were one of, let's say, 20 or 30 radio stations that corporation owned. And all of the stations like that here.
And so the corporation is going to think, why do I have to employ 20 program directors?
You just
I can just
one.
Have one.
Right.
But then you don't have someone who's local who understands right. that San Antonio is crazy for a particular brand of music.
And unfortunately, that's all economies of scale.
All right. Okay, so we're going to go out with another tune here, and I guess you can back know what this is. It's Led Zeppelin here on The Source.
Come from the land of the ice and snow, from the midnight sun where the hot springs glow.
And this is The Source, and we're back. We're talking about heavy metal here in San Antonio. You know, it was a time when things like AC/DC or even Led Zeppelin, a lot of these bands, they were not commercial. You would never hear them as a music track for a major motion picture. They were really just outside of the realm of what was considered to be commercially viable for mainstream America. Not anymore. But back in the day, back in black here in San Antonio, this was the devil music, and San Antonio ate it up. So what was it about the tunes in San Antonio? Let's go back to the phone lines. If you want to call in, 210-614-8980. Raul is on the air. And Raul, welcome to The Source.
Hey, thank you very much. First time caller. Listen, I want to acknowledge and appreciate the show that you're doing, as well as the work that Mr. Mills did. And Joanthony Negroni. Let's not forget some great production companies. Stone City Attraction brought in a lot of bands and booked them locally where it was affordable. Mm-hmm. And the Lions Club in Massimano Alegre, they did a great job during their run in Fiesta, during Fiesta. So that's what I wanted to remind everybody about.
All right, Raul, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that. Let's go over to Juan. Juan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, sir.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. Hey, Ruby, how you doing?
How's it going?
It's good. Just wanted to, just like the previous caller, just mention that, you know, what you're doing with this show is much appreciated, just like what Ruby did back in April at TexPop, just bringing to light what this town was known for and what it's still known for a long time. It's, you know, I think the term heavy metal capital has been thrown around a lot, and it's, I'm actually currently working on a book detailing the history of Texas metal. And in my research coming up, you know, I've seen that term written everywhere. And in my research, finding that it was actually in Texas Monthly where San Antonio was first named the heavy metal capital of the world back in 1985. So it wasn't just we named ourselves that. It was recognized by, at the time, and it still is, a very prestigious magazine on Texas culture and entertainment and society. So it's good to see it all coming to light and showing that it did have an impact. It influenced me greatly as a kid. I grew up in the scene. You know, I was back in the early 80s. That's where I was. I was at all these local shows. So,
Juan, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Good luck on your book. But the question we want to ask is why? Why is San Antonio the heavy metal capital of the world? Why did this audience find this music so captivating? What resonated? So let me go back to Gregory Peek. He's at Penn State, a historian there. Is that a question that can be answered?
I think it's a difficult question to answer, but I think we can flesh out some broad outlines. I think definitely that the working class identity of many San Antonians plays a component. I think, as I said, there's an ethnic component to it. The Mexican-American community in San Antonio, I think, maybe was, you know, looking for music that was their own, but that wasn't their parents' music. It wasn't the top 40 R&B from a decade or so earlier. You know, it's very personal. I think, as Ruby mentioned, like, there's a lot of personal sort of idiosyncrasies into what draws you into particular musical genres at a particular point in time. But I think what I want to do with the oral history component, which I don't know if y'all have talked any about this, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, having an oral history of people who identified as metalheads or went to metal shows or listened to metal music, I think that, you know, gives an individual voice to each listener. And once you compile or aggregate those voices, maybe then you can start to say, well, this is where we see the broad trend lines pointing and why this music was so popular.
We have to also look at what else was going on in the culture at that time, because everything is a reaction to everything else. Right. So this is also the time when disco was around for a bit. You know, there was also country western. People were kind of looking around and saying, what do I want to be? And then there's not just heavy metal, but there's different types of heavy metal. And it's, there was, I think there was a particular flavor that that really came to San Antonio and found harmony. Gregory, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm still hesitant to sort of, you know, say anything definitive. My own research is pretty in the initial stages, but there was a San Antonio sound. I mean, there was a San Antonio sound for metal. It came out of the particular taste-making abilities of Joe Anthony and Lou Roney, and then I think Joe Anthony was particularly suited to, you know, create that demand and to create interest. And then through places like Stone City Attractions, and I think also the military, having such a strong military presence here in San Antonio, it could then be exported to other parts of the nation and then the world at large.
Now, the caller, this is Malcolm. Malcolm, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. So I grew up in San Antonio and, of course, loved the Joe Anthony Show and listened to it frequently. But I also wanted to point out, if nobody's touched on it yet, that another big contributor, especially later on, say in the 80s and 90s, was the metal show that they had on KSYM, the SAC radio station. And in a sense, they took it even further by playing some really, really extreme stuff from bands, in some cases, that never even made it into the mainstream. They would play some of the Metallica and bands like that, but really, really extreme metal, you know.
And also they would play things like Husker Du and other bands that you wouldn't find any other place that could probably, you know, bleed over. Donnie Meals, you know, tell me about, do you think this could ever happen again with the way the media is structured?
The model right now for radio being corporate, no, I don't think so. But it doesn't mean that it can't happen, because there is such a thing as local ownership and then having a cooperative or cooperation between the station and its audience and the promoters. I think that, you know, you don't have to be the number one radio station, but you can have a really dedicated audience, as Kiss and K-Mac was able to do, and make a profit, have a viable business, but yet still be able to satisfy what the audience is looking for.
So you definitely listen to your audience, reflect that, lead them, but also follow them at the same time.
Don't tell your audience what you like.
Okay, and then Ruby Garza, you know, you love metal music. Why?
I just love music in general. You get me anywhere. I will dance to some disco. I will rock to some rock.
Well, she was a one-person mosh pit just a second ago.
Yeah, she's been banging her head the entire time, every time we would play something. All right, so let's go ahead and go out with some Triumph. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're going to slip over to a pledge drive, but please support us. The number is 1-800-622-8977. 1-800-622-8977. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.